Are you a fan of Gucci handbags, Nike sneakers, or Apple MacBooks? Well, then you have a preference for premium brands. These are brands that often strike a chord and with which consumers often even have an emotional connection. But behind these brands, there is much more than just emotion. The underlying companies have strong balance sheets and therefore represent interesting investment opportunities. The past year has been very turbulent for these brands. Revenues fell dramatically as countries went into lockdown and stores remained closed. But the market of premium brands has started its path towards recovery. And in this podcast, I will talk to Caroline Rey about the opportunities that premium brands offer to investors. Caroline, welcome. Great to have you.
Thank you, Annette. Very good to be here.
It's nice that you are here to talk in detail about premium brands, but before we really dive into the matter, what's your favorite premium brand?
Well, it's hard to say. It will depend whether I'm in a mood for dressing up or playing sports or just relaxing in my home. I would pick a different brand, of course. But at the moment, the one I would choose could be Dior. Dior is a luxury brand with a lot of innovation and creativity. And it goes through many product categories, handbags, cosmetics, perfume. So it's actually a great brand.
I can imagine not all listeners are into brands and its economy. So let's start with the basics. Can you explain what are premium brands?
So a premium brand must meet the criteria for brand excellence and also address consumer aspirations. So for brand excellence, we really consider three elements. First of all, a company needs to offer differentiated products. And this really requires know-how, expertise, and that is often rooted in the brand history and its tradition. Then a brand also needs to offer an uplifting experience. This is absolutely key. Customers today require a holistic approach to the brand, and that includes high-end service, beautiful stores, but also attractive events, entertainment, etc. And for sure, digital is part of it and has really become a full component of a premium experience. And then the third element would be innovation. A premium brand needs to innovate all the time. It is all about excitement, newness, and positive emotions. Typically, they would do that through collaborations with other brands or with artists. They can produce capsule collections. They can innovate in personalized consumer interactions, etc. So all these features really define for us a superior brand. But then a premium brand also needs to address major consumer aspirations. And we have identified also three major trends that allow our brands to grow for the long term. The first trend would be the fact that consumers are willing to access superior quality goods. And that goes with the rising purchasing power and the need also for social recognition. And this is particularly true in emerging markets. The second trend would be the need to express one's identity. And that definitely goes through the social media and the visual impact of it. This is very true for the younger generations that we call the selfie generation, who really do want to make an impact visually.
Those are the millennials.
Those are the millennials, absolutely. And then the third trend we have identified is the aspiration to well-being. People want to feel good. They seek inspiring leisure moments. And there is also more focus on sustainability and the quality of products and services that are offered. So in a nutshell, premium brands really have to meet our criteria for brand excellence and also meet consumer aspirations.
Clear. Can you define the premium brands market and its segments in terms of size and market share?
So premium brands can be found in every consumer segment. Our DNA is luxury, and that's roughly 40% of the premium brands investment universe. But we also find premium brands in cosmetics, in food and drinks, typically champagne or cognacs, in sporting goods, in hotels, and in leisure. So overall, we have selected an investment universe of 120 names. So it's actually quite concentrated. And those premium brands are mostly based in Europe, as well as in the US. All of them have strong financial criteria with pricing power and cost discipline. So historically, even though we find premium brands across consumer segments, all of them show superior revenue growth. Definitely it has to do with the pricing power and the demand also from emerging markets. Premium brands, all of them also have superior operating margins and also a strong cash flow and balance sheets. If I can give you some examples of the strong cash flows, you know, I would name Apple, Nike, Hermès, Richemont or L'Oréal, which all have net cash positions in their balance sheet and gigantic cash flow generations every year.
But I already mentioned that the pandemic created a severe drop in demand and turnover. So can you describe the dynamics in the premium brands market during the pandemic?
Yes, I mean, 2020 was truly an exceptional year for us, unprecedented. We saw the largest contraction in the luxury sector in 2020. We estimate the drop was more than 20%, which again is unseen before. People were locked down in their homes, stores were closed, nobody could travel. So the impact was really huge.
And was it bigger? Was the impact bigger on premium brands than normal brands?
The thing is, premium brands are discretionary, you know, by definition. So if people cannot go out and shop, it's very difficult to have growth. But what is interesting is that if people are prevented from going shopping, they would compensate as soon as they actually can do it. And this is exactly what we saw last year. The trough of the crisis was in Q2. But then in the second half of the year, when stores started to reopen and people could get out of their homes, we saw a tremendous rebound in sales. And that was really extraordinary. We saw triple-digit growth rates to start in China because they were the first economy to reopen. But then it followed also in the US. And we saw this revenge buying phenomenon truly happening in the second half of last year and more in the fourth quarter. This trend actually continued into this year, in 2021. The first quarter results of our company was excellent. And we think this acceleration will continue into the second quarter. Now, one segment was particularly hurt. It's the travel and tourism segment, obviously, because nobody could really travel. In the first half of last year, we estimate this segment was down 40 to 60%. So that was really enormous. And we don't expect tourism to come back straight away and reach the previous levels in 2021. It will probably take 2 or 3 years to catch up and reach the previous levels, the pre-COVID levels.
Okay, but overall, you could say that the roaring 20s, as they are often called, have really started.
We have seen clearly an acceleration across segments, indeed. Makeup was completely absent last year, and now women start to wear makeup again. Sporting goods were very much individual last year. People were exercising in their homes or they were running outside. And now we start again to see football being, at play. So yes, definitely acceleration across luxury goods as well. So again, the only segment which will be lagging will be tourism.
Travel.
And in particular, the corporate travel.
Yeah. What are the 2 or 3 most important growth drivers in the upcoming 3 to 5 years?
So, one growth driver, which had started already, let's say, 3-4 years ago, and which is definitely accelerating, is the move to online. Of course, consumers went online and bought goods through e-commerce in the past year. But, you know, premium brands were quite late in terms of developing their digital strategy. And this pandemic was definitely the trigger for them to invest more through their marketing, digital strategy, but also e-commerce, reaching out to their consumers in a more personalized way. So this under-penetration of online in premium brands has actually progressed now. And we see brands able to reach out to new consumers even more than before. Younger consumers in particular, but also consumers, you know, in China, in tier three, tier four cities, these consumers did not have access to luxury shops. And today they can actually shop online. So this is a major trend which has accelerated and which will be definitely a positive catalyst for further growth in premium brands.
So that's the first trend, digitalization.
Digitalization, absolutely. Then a second trend is the premiumization effect, what we call the premiumization. The fact that consumers are really craving for differentiated products and they are ready to purchase higher quality products at higher prices. We have seen that definitely unfold this year. China is a very good example because we see Chinese consumers being able to spend a lot of money on luxury brands. As an example, when the Hermès store reopened last summer in China, one store of Hermès brand was able to generate $2.5 million of sales in one day. This is an absolute record level, you know, and it does show that consumers are really ready to spend up when they have the mood to spend and when they feel like buying their favorite brands.
Let's talk a bit more about China, which is the world's second economy. Can you use a few figures to clarify the importance of China as a sales market for premium brand products? You already gave the Hermès example, but can you give a bit more color to that?
I mean, for sure, Annette, China is very important for premium brands. And if we look at the Chinese consumers, they represent today close to one third of premium brands sales. That's about Chinese spending at home, but also Chinese traveling. I mean, for sure, during the pandemic, Chinese consumers were spending mostly at home. But typically, when they travel in Europe, for example, they tend to spend a lot of money on premium brands. So in addition to these traveling trends, the purchasing power of Chinese consumers is also increasing very quickly. It has to go with the urbanization phenomenon in China, but also with the fact that the affluent consumers continue to grow. And there was actually a recent report from McKinsey about that, showing that the Chinese affluent consumers today represent 13% of the population, but they are expected to reach 60%, 60, of the population by 2030. And of course, this represents an enormous opportunity for more purchases of premium brands going forward. In addition, in China, premium brands are really synonymous with higher social status and success. They are true symbols for style and fashion. And therefore, the Chinese consumers will continue to be an engine for growth for our premium brands.
Is there also a vulnerability attached to that? What is the risk that the Chinese government will take measures that are detrimental to the premium brand sector, for example, to promote local brands over Western ones?
Well, it's a good question. And clearly, we keep an eye on China and what the authorities are doing. Promoting local brands is definitely something they do for many product segments. But we would argue that premium brands are relatively resilient to that risk as they are viewed as unique and with a real savoir-faire. And that is quite difficult to replicate. It takes a long time, you know, to establish a brand, in particular in the luxury area. And if you look at brands like Hermès or Louis Vuitton, they were born in the 19th century. they really impress the Chinese consumers by their heritage and their tradition. And it's, again, very difficult to replicate in a quick manner such brands. So at the end of the day, differentiation and know-how are key elements for brands to flourish. And that really allows for high barriers to entry.
I was wondering, has the interest of consumers in certain categories of premium brands, has that changed? Or do you see a shift in what consumers want?
The consumers are always younger. So it's true that there is a trend towards products that attract the younger consumers. That would have to do with casual wear. Typically, we see a huge trend towards casualization. In the past, luxury had to do with formal wear. Today, it has very much to do with fancy sneakers, sweaters, also skincare, but jewelry, across categories, but it is just less formal. And then there's another trend which is very apparent. It's the trend towards experiences and leisure. The millennials also are very attracted to that. They want to have fun. They want to go out with their friends, have fancy drinks, go to concerts. And that also plays our premium brand theme, as consumers will always be looking for the highest quality and expertise in those various fields. Another trend is also actually has to do with women, because we see women more and more independent financially, and they tend to buy products for themselves. This has implications in the jewelry category in particular. We see increasingly jewelry being bought not only for presents, but for self-wearing. So, women go in stores and they buy for themselves. And that's actually a very good thing, which translates into double-digit growth now for the jewelry category. And we think going forward, this category will continue to be very, very attractive.
Okay. What's your investment universe?
So our investment universe of premium brands is made of 120 companies globally. So as I was saying, the DNA is very much luxury, and the luxury segment represents now 40% of our investment universe.
And that's twice the allocation in sports or food and beverages, right? So that's a really big percentage.
Yes, it is. It is. And you're right. If we look at sports and cosmetics, food and beverage, leisure and hotels, they are all between 10 and 20%, indeed. The reason why luxury is overrepresented has to do with the precise criteria we look at in our definition of a premium brand. So, we look at the differentiation element, and this is clearly well represented in the luxury segment through the innovation and the tradition of those luxury brands. The uplifting experience angle is also very favorable for luxury brands, as the shopping experience typically ranks very high, but also the client service. We look at the brand integrity within a premium brand, and that has to do with the integration of the supply chain as well as the control of the distribution. Again, luxury is very strong in those fields, and usually brands like to control their production. Digital strategy is the other element we look at in our definition. So in that aspect, luxury is a little bit behind, but they are catching up, as we explained earlier. And then the fifth element we look at in our definition of a premium brand is cash flow return on investment. That's a pure quantitative element, and actually the luxury sector ranks very high. Luxury industry tends to have high margins, high cash flow generation, and strong balance sheets. And therefore, if you put all this together, it's true that the luxury segment is overrepresented just because they rank very high in those five different categories.
Clear. What are other financial conditions that the companies in your portfolio must meet?
So in the portfolio, we would select only a small number of companies. So we look at this investment universe I just mentioned of 120 names. And within that, we will pick a selection of between 30 and 50 companies. We will select only the very high convictions that we have and the best risk-return propositions. We look at growth companies for sure, but not only. I mean, we have a variety of risk profiles in our portfolio. We would be able to select a company like Tesla, for instance, which is a very high growth company with more than 50% growth per annum in their revenues. But we would also select companies like L'Oréal, which is providing lower growth, more like mid to high single digit revenue growth, but with a high cash flow and a high margin profile, as well as strong visibility. So we look at growth, we look at profitability, we look at the quality of management. This is very important. So we liaise with the management of our companies on a very regular basis. We talk to the senior management, CFO or CEO. We look at their strategy. We look at their track record. We want to understand exactly what these companies are up to and where they will invest in the future. And then, of course, we consider valuation, which is a very important part of our investment process.
Of course.
Valuations through market multiples, but also through discounted cash flows. So we look at all this. And on top of that, we add some risk management metrics, such as volatility and liquidity. So looking at the fundamental of companies, quality of management, valuation, and risk metrics, we come up with target weights for our premium brands fund. And mm-hmm. as I said, we are very concentrated with only high convictions in our fund.
Caroline, finally, I'd like to talk to you about the sustainability of premium brands, a hot topic. The consumer society puts great pressure on the world in which we live. Consumption has a negative impact on the environment. Is this a concern for the premium brand companies?
The topic of ESG is absolutely key, and we see consumers increasingly caring about the quality of what they buy, but also the transparency of the supply chain, and they look at the provenance of the raw materials. So a premium brand definitely has to consider those sustainability issues, not only to participate to the common effort for a better planet, but also because consumers are requiring more and more that brands pay attention. And this is particularly true, again, for the millennial consumers, the younger consumers, who particularly care for those topics. The companies need to adapt. There is a shift happening with a heightened focus on sustainability during the COVID pandemic, definitely. We are seeing companies taking measures. I like to give the example of L'Oréal, who has set targets for 2030 with carbon neutrality to be reached by then. And also they committed to no more plastic in packaging at all by 2030. So we are going in the right direction. There is also a big trend towards the circular economy, which in itself represents a rising industry of more than 60 billion euros in size. So, you know, we are going definitely in that direction.
Okay. And will that focus on ESG also mean that you will perhaps exclude some companies from your investment universe?
So definitely, as investment managers, we also have our share. So we do take into account ESG criteria in our investment processes. And to start with, as you said, we exclude some questionable ESG subsegments. For instance, we would not invest in casinos. We would not invest in cruise lines, nor in high-volume car producers. That's the starting point. But then we also include ESG criteria in our investment processes, and we consider social, environmental, and governance-related topics, which help us determine our target weight in the fund. So we use those criteria with the help of third-party providers, and we also engage directly with management of the companies we invest in. I think this is very important. Companies have to understand that we as investors care also for these topics and that they have to address them not only with their consumers, but also with their investors. So the Premium Brands Fund, so that you know, we are classified as an Article 8 fund by the new European SFDR regulation. So that means that we do take into account those ESG topics inside our investment process. This is still work in progress. We still have more to do, both on the company side, but also on the investment manager side. But, you know, I'm more on the optimistic camp because I can see that we are going in the right direction.
Thank you so much. I'd like to thank my guest, Caroline Rey, a portfolio manager of the Premium Brand Strategy at Pictet Asset Management. Thank you, Caroline.
You are very welcome. It was a pleasure.
You listened to a podcast about the investment opportunity of premium brands. Thank you for downloading and for listening. This podcast is offered to you by Pictet Asset Management.
This marketing material is for professional investors only. It is prepared by Pictet Asset Management Europe SA. Address: Herengracht 456, 1017 CA Amsterdam. However, it is not intended for distribution to any person or entity who is a citizen or resident of any locality, state, country or other jurisdiction where such distribution, publication, or use would be contrary to law or regulation. Information used in the preparation of this document is based upon sources believed to be reliable, but no representation or warranty is given as to the accuracy or completeness of those sources. Any opinion, estimate or forecast may be changed at any time without prior warning. Investors should read the prospectus or offering memorandum before investing in any Pictet-managed funds. Tax treatment depends on the individual circumstances of each investor and may be subject to change in the future. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. All forms of investment involve risk. The value of investments and the income from them can fall as well as rise and is not guaranteed. You may not get back the amount originally invested. For information about personal data protection, please refer to the Pictet Group's privacy notice, available on our website, am.pictet.com.